You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
Yeah, man, let's go, man. I got the doobie up and going, man.
That stays in. You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is The Drumhead. My wife, Diane, says hi. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And tonight we have special guests. Let's start with the Klingon.
Hey, it's Brian Dedamore from Indiana, the former co-host of the Lou Trek Show. Kapla.
Yeah, former, I don't know. I've been threatening we're going to start back up again soon. But
better start off with the accent or a problem first.
Yeah, I haven't kept up with that lately. How's that going?
Ugly, as usual.
I don't...
And what's even worse is that CBS Paramount's releasing a new official Star Trek organization in January, sanctioned by them. It's called Starfleet. It's called Starfleet Soul Sector. And guess who's on the Joint Chief of Staff of the Ground Forces?
Who dat?
Me, man.
Really?
Yeah, really. I'm going to be in charge of the Ground Forces membership.
Wow.
I'm one of five officers in charge. And guess what job I got? Of all the jobs in the world, I'm the chief of logistics. I'm the man that manages the money.
Oh, that's going to be a logistical nightmare for them.
I'm a mecha pilot. Damn it, Lou. I'm a mecha pilot, not a damn count.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Dang it, I'm a Klingon, not an accountant.
Yeah. And Brian, you're not the only person who joined us today. As I think I said last week, we also have another one, Data. What's happening with you? Say hi.
Hello, everyone. This is Data from the Washington area of the United States. State, not D.C.
I was about ready to ask.
Yeah, Washington State's one of the few states where you have to say state after it every single time. Mm. Otherwise, people don't know what you're talking about.
That makes sense. What's happening?
Yeah, things are going great. I've been busy with my activism stuff, as well as work and being a father.
Daddy Data. Okay. Well, let's see. Brian, the last time I had you on was for a reunion back in, I believe, June or July, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, that sounds about right. Yeah.
And Data, we had you last on for First Contact. So those were some pretty highly rated episodes for us as well.
And yay! I see I haven't lost my touch.
And now you're going to be on for another highly rated episode, which I'm plugging in our scores now. As I do every show, I try to take a guess at what we have or what we're going to say. So let's go ahead and go on. The synopsis for tonight's episode is, an overzealous Starfleet admiral begins a witch hunt aboard the Enterprise, determined to find a conspiracy and eventually accusing Captain Picard of treason. And there's no reason for that treason. This is the 21st episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation, written on April 29th, 1991, written by Jerry Taylor of the Voyager fame, and directed by the Beard of Justice, Jonathan Frakes. Guest stars include the mighty Gene Simmons as Admiral Nora Satie, Bruce French as Sabin Genestra, Spencer Garrett as Simon Tarsis, Henry Woronitz as Jadon, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he is on Voyager, that episode we did for the Delta Quadrant, Distant Origin, wasn't he? Dr. Soren? Or not Soren. Help me, brain. What am I thinking of?
I don't know. I wasn't following you on the Voyager
answer. That's right. It was Baker.
The dinosaur.
Yes. Yeah, I think he plays. That doctor who's trying to prove the distant origin theory.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I did. Okay, you just that. Yeah, I think he did because I remember the episode now.
Yeah,
he was. They were a race of dinosaurs, if I remember right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Chakotay. This is one of them Chakotay bad shuttle missions, if I remember right.
Well, name a good shuttle mission. Exactly.
Any shuttle mission is a bad shuttle mission.
It's all bad shuttle missions. Yes.
Never let Chakotay out on a shuttle. It always causes problems. Right.
And finally, we have Anne Shea as a very, very quiet Nellan Tora or something. So, what do we think about this episode? Brian, why don't you hit us first?
Well, I actually don't usually come on for non-Klingon episodes, but I actually asked for this one just because we got a chance to see Picard really show his the spirit of who he is as an officer. And who he is as a person with this one against a very strong, potent admiral who's been around. Her father was a noted admiral and a prosecutor in Starfleet command as well. And you got a chance to see Picard right or wrong. As you indicated in Semastics, a very zealous admiral, always looking for a conspiracy in anything. And what ticks me off is she drags Worf into this conspiracy thing during the show. So yeah, this is kind of like I wanted to come in because I understand what she was trying to do, and I understand what Picard was trying to stop her from doing. So yeah, this is one of them episodes I'm glad to actually be a part of. And this was a very good episode done by Jerry and Mr. Franks. I can't think of his
Jonathan.
First name. Got him. Jonathan.
Okay. Mr. Data. What about you? What are your initial thoughts?
Yes, I really like this episode. Certainly one that comes back up in my memories and think about. It's a very, you know, like the kind of episodes I like. It's contemplative. It makes you think about things because you can see, you know, side or, you know, different sides are presented. Even though Picard obviously takes one side, and the show maybe gives you the impression that that's the right side. There's still a lot to be said for the arguments, the opposing arguments sometimes. So mm-hmm. I like episodes like that.
Okay. How about you, Doc?
Well, I think, you know, similar to what has already been said, I think this is a great episode, good performances. I do remember watching this as a young kid. And I must have been a stupid young kid because I never, you know, when you're 11 or 12, 11 or so, it can come across a little bit, you know, boring and lots of chatter, not many explosions. Mm-hmm. But can I revisit in this as a hopefully more grown up personality wise? I think that this is a great episode, and I think it is. I've heard a lot of people say that this is kind of very much forward looking, or at least it's kind of relevant for our age. But I don't think that that's true as much. Like timeless,
mm-hmm.
And I think maybe people have revisited it and have began to kind of give it light recently. But I don't actually think that it's it has to be considered as part of the context of the current social political situation nowadays, or in the 90s or even before then. I think it's very much kind of timeless. Timeless debates are touched upon. As a result, I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, I'm telling you what I think, Doc. If you could do me a quick favor and bring your microphone up a little bit, it sounds like you're actually talking in the bedroom and the missus is sleeping. But
actually, no one is sleeping today.
Really?
No one is. I have the house all to myself. Because although it's late,
yeah, because your volume went way down. I actually had turned the volume up on my headphones to hear your last one.
Me too. I was thinking, let Kate sleep then. But okay, that's cool. Me, I love this episode. I think it's great. I love courtroom dramas. I've said it before when A Measure of a Man happened. These are pretty cool things. And this admiral, who starts off as the goddess of investigations, and she's done so much. And there is a question that even in Picard's log I have to discuss. And then all of a sudden, she just goes off the rails and then becomes a serious threat to everybody on board. So, I'm good with this episode. So, let me shut a couple windows down. And let's start out with the Klingon, accused of stealing information on the propulsion system and giving that information to the Romulans. They also suspect him of sabotage. But, what's his true crime? To me, it seems like this guy... Obviously, the Klingons and the Romulans, for two peoples who desperately hate each other, it's amazing how many times we see a Klingon-Romulan connection.
Well, you can thank some. There's a lot of Klingons who thought the treaty should have never been broken. We should have kept being allies with them, but... That's some people's opinion. You don't want to hear mine. I'm liable to have to kill you for giving out Klingon trade secrets.
Well, it seems to me that the Klingons are all about honor, and the Romulans are all about dishonor and stabbing you in the back. So how could they possibly get along with each other?
Simple, because the Klingons are leaning at this time. Most people didn't know it, but Kempek's reign was winding down, and there was a lot of this. There was a lot of basically Romulan type activity going behind the scenes of the High Council. So there was a lot of issues going on, which when we get into the later episodes of Star Trek: The Next Gen and some of the other Klingon episodes in DS9, you'll see where all this was, where this is all brewing into and stuff. There's just the honor is lost. There's no one to really instill it. I mean, you got the teachings of Kalis, but if you don't have the right way to interpret them, it's like trying to interpret the Bible. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's so many different versions of the Bible. Which one is right? And I get in this argument all the time with people on this. But The truth of the matter is that the Klingons were leaning towards being more dishonorable than they were acting honorably. And those are facts that you can't dispute by the way the writers wrote up Star Trek The Next Gen.
And it seems like they try to redeem themselves in DS9, but still.
Did do a good job of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the guys, what are your thoughts on what I was saying? Data?
So, Jadon, when he's talking to Worf in the corridor, he says, your name is not spoken on the homeworld.
Yeah.
It must be hard to be without honor, without the chance for glory. And I'm listening to those words, and it seems like most Klingon society is the opposite. You know, it's without glory and without the chance for honor. So Worf's name is not currently spoken on the homeworld. So he currently doesn't have any glory. Nobody's glorifying him as a great warrior. But he still, in my mind, does still have his own internal honor. But yet, often Klingon society, or especially the ones that are a little more inclined to work with the Romulans, like Jadon or Duras, they seem to flip those concepts, you know, as if honor was something that is bestowed upon you from the outside, which is really what glory is. And glory is something that you need to go prove, which is really more what honor is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had problems with the Klingon society. Or Brian, you talk about, you know, it's just as difficult as understanding all the different versions of the Bible, where, of course, one possible answer is none of them are correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that could be, I could agree with you on that statement as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not the one that has to judge. I'm not the judge, okay, because I'm not one to... I mean, I'll argue with you on it, and not believe you me, Lou'll tell you when I'm locked on something, I don't give up easily. But I have this, I see this a lot in Facebook too, among the Klingons that are out there too. There is a big talk about what is honorable and what isn't honorable, if Duras was actually acting in his way honorable or not. It's your perception of what you know what it's your perception of how you take the word of Kalos and apply it to who you are as a Klingon warrior. And I try to use that basic philosophy even in my real life as well as my persona life. And it actually isn't that bad if you really look at it. It just basically says be honest and truthful. Fight with honor. If you can follow them, I don't see why anyone would have a problem with it like the Duras's. I agree. Duras looks at it and says, well, I'm the head of the house of Duras. I have honor. I can do whatever I want. No, it doesn't. It's actually the opposite. Kind of like if you ever took an oath of knighthood in the early centuries when knights were knighted, their primary duty was to defend the weak and hold true virtue to themselves in combat and in their lives. And the knights forgot about that and became evil.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Same basic principle with the Klingon Empire. They hold the virtues of Kalos, but they've been twisted. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Because it seems like Worf is the one who's dishonored, but yet is 10 times more honorable than the average Klingon.
Yes. And he even mentioned that when Gowron took office, I think, in DS9, how he was trying to get rid of Mortar because he felt threatened by him. So he was trying to give him an honorable death by making him go on raids that he knew he should have never survived. But he was such a military brilliant genius, he did.
Yeah.
Okay, and actually won battles that he shouldn't have won. because he was militarily brilliant. To me, that's dishonorable to try to eliminate your enemy by putting him in scenarios where you know he shouldn't be losing and should have killed him. To me, that's dishonorable by wasting your general like that and wasting resources attached to him to do something right. like that. But some people look at it as a political necessity to keep their position as Chancellor of the High Council.
Okay. All right, Doc, how about you? What are your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, I pretty much agree with what Datum said before, so I'm happy to keep rolling.
Okay, good enough. Okay, so...
One thing about Jadon, other than the honor kind of question, is it's just nice to have a Klingon that's not a typical warrior. I was really piqued. It piqued my interest in this teaser. Oh, he's an exobiologist. He's wearing this weird shirt with tassels. That's not very Klingon looking. I was sort of excited about the possibility of finding a non-warrior Klingon. But yet it turns out he's actually pretty typical warrior Klingon. He even apparently has a rank. They refer to him as lieutenant. It doesn't seem like much of a KDF uniform that he's wearing, but I don't know.
Keep in mind, if you follow the way the Klingon society is, it's kind of like a caste system or a castle system. There are the warriors, obviously, are in charge of the major resources and the cities and that kind of stuff. And then there's governors that handle planets or regions. But then you have your own science castle that handles bringing technology up to date and that kind of stuff. Scientific, medical, they may not... Judicial. We saw that in Enterprise where the judicial caste was there that to handle juries, judges, and that kind of stuff as well. Klingon society was built on this. And a lot of people don't understand this when they see a sign like, you see this guy wearing tassels on his uniform and think, well, he's not very Klingonish. Klingons, even in the cast that are not warriors, are still taught basic combat. Even the basic farmer who goes out and plows the fields and grows the food for the Klingon Empire is always taught to be at least be able to defend themselves. You'll note that in the Days of Honor book where Kor and Kirk team up together. The warriors that were farmers, some of them are ex-warriors who don't want to fight no more, so they'll go out and win glory by providing food for the Empire. That's their way of regaining their glory and their honor. Or some of them, or they go and teach these farmers how to fight, so if someone invades them, they've got an instant army ready to fight. So that's where you get. That's why most people don't understand where this Klingon comes in.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering that too. I mean, a Klingon exobiologist. To me, I mean, obviously there has to be things like Klingon brain surgeons, the gardener, or you know, the janitor. There has to be other jobs except just straight up warrior.
There are. You just don't see them that much because you usually don't see the Empire. You don't see people outside the Empire. Uh-huh. So it's hard to imagine that, oh my God, Klingons actually have exobiologists who are quite intelligent and know what their science is and stuff like that. You don't see many Klingon doctors because most of them are more like EMTs than they are actual doctors, because they don't believe in using surgery to save a life. Usually most of the surgery is to like take an eye out and put something in it to replace it like they did with Christopher Plummer played
and General Chang.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Chang, he actually got that fighting hand-to-hand combat with a knife. He actually instructed the doctor to actually drill that patch into his eye.
Okay. All right. And one thing I also thought that this Jadon, he was kind of careless about what he was doing because the computer logged his access with his communicator. Now, are they saying that if he left his communicator in his quarters, he would have gotten away with the crime?
Probably.
I mean, because anybody can walk up to a computer terminal and say, hey, could you show me information about your dilithium chamber, please? Yeah, sure. Why the hell not? Here it is. I mean...
Well, think about it. Back in Star Trek Nemesis, if it wasn't for the fact that Geordi actually was poking around, he wouldn't have noticed, because Lore wasn't trying to steal classified data. He was just stealing routine traffic stuff that almost anybody could access. But it was the type of stuff that when you combine it all together says, oh, security problem. Same thing here. I mean, he probably logged in. The computer didn't think much of it, but the communicator showing where he was logging in and that kind of stuff kind of blew it for him.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. So the one thing he says that I don't get, because I wouldn't want to be in his place when he says, well, send me home if you are so distrusting. I think that's the last place you'd want to go, because once the high command finds out what he's done, like he says, they will put him to a slow death. That doesn't sound very fun for me.
No, it isn't, trust me.
Oh.
Well, he also talks about how he has...
friends.
You know, backers. He's got friends, right? So the High Council, like the majority of the High Council, a certain thing, or maybe against dishonor, but really there's some backdoor dealings, and, you know.
Right.
Problem is, that's not Jadzia, but the one after that. Noted that in conversations with Worf. They're kind of like hypocritical of what they believe in. They don't practice what they preach. They just kind of go through the motions of it. Most Klingons are typically not as honorable as they impress everybody that they are.
All right.
That makes sense.
And they're going to distance themselves completely from Jadon. I don't know who he is. Right. All right. And so what do you think of the Worf tummy face punch? You know, the quick elbow to the stomach and the backhand to the face. Ah, man, I've always thought, man, I'd love to try that on someone.
Well, Lou, as big as you are, nobody would ever expect you to do right. That.
Right. Yeah. Doc, I'm glad I didn't try it with you at the Rio. You know, we were walking through some pretty heavy traffic and just stopped and go, poof, ow! No, you're way too tall. It wouldn't have worked.
Well, I mean, in your new job, right, as you're heading over to, you know, people, you should try it. Certainly the guys that are troublemakers.
Little old ladies are the worst. Little old ladies are the worst.
Are they from Pasadena?
They're from hell. No. Little old ladies are the worst. And then little old ladies who are losing their money are even worse than the worst. But that's a whole different story here. So, yes, I'd love to come up from, you know, come up. Hi, did you need? No, I don't need any. Oh, really? Boom, bam. And then just walk on with my job. But.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, especially the lady who slapped my hand. Like, you did not
I'd be escorting her out the door.
Yeah. Yeah, they were going to, actually, but she decided to go on her own because she knew she was going to be in some trouble. Yeah. I'm just going to leave.
That would have been after I bitch slapped her back on the floor. For
definitely. Me. So, yeah, little old ladies are the worst. So, yeah, I'd love to try it on them.
I'm sorry, I have a policy. I don't hit first, but if you're stupid enough to hit me, you're stupid enough to pay the consequences.
Yeah, you're willing to get what you get. and you don't throw a fit. Okay, so here we go.
I don't care what your gender is, neither.
Right. This is where I'm a little confused. Picard's log says that Admiral Nora Sati is coming out of retirement to head this investigation. And he says that her investigation exposed an alien conspiracy against Starfleet Command 3 years ago. Does that sound familiar? I mean, isn't that something that Picard and Riker did, you know, leading up to the explosion of Commander Remick's head? Weren't they the ones that exposed a conspiracy against Starfleet Command?
Yeah.
Well, I took this as being that, you know, after the episode aired and the Enterprise kind of, you know, warped away, she was... I don't know if you guys have this in the US, but whenever there's something that happens in the UK, some politician will appoint some judge to do a review of what's gone on, and it will usually take a couple of years, and then the person hands in a big review of what's gone on. So I assume that this admiral in this case merely wrote up the, you know, the quote conspiracy episode and handed it into Starfleet Command.
Mm. So Picard and Riker blows his head up and she gets the glory for it. It could be. Could be a wholly different conspiracy all the way, you know. And one has nothing to do with the other.
Yep, you could be right.
Maybe.
Well, we do also know that in the episode Conspiracy, there were some people that were figuring out the conspiracy, you know, like Walker Keel before he got killed. So this is obviously a retcon to put Nora Sati in that group and say that she was one of the people that was starting to figure things out. Mm-hmm.
I think she just doing it because she wanted to get back in the glory and back into Starfleet. I think that when she did this, when she came on board, she was looking the way to put herself back in the limelight like her father was. Because you notice she always mentions her father and how much they would debate something at the dinner table or something like that. I think she wanted to come out of retirement because I think something forced her out of retirement, but they brought her back. Anyway, because they know she's a great investigator and a wicked judge advocate general. Because that's what her job was judge advocate general. Her job was to investigate this kind of stuff all the time.
Huh.
Before she retired, she wasn't a combat admiral like Nayshev or some of the other ones. Mm. She was a JAG.
Okay. All right, so here's another episode where we have Riker, who is forever Riker. He didn't get out of the transporter room without giving the transporter chick a glance on his way out the door. And she looks back at him. So my guess is he's looking at her as if to say, "You were magnificent last night." And she's looking at him saying something like, "Eh, I've had better." She turns her head down quickly.
Eh. Sorry, I missed this. When was this?
Yeah, just as an admiral and her two sidekicks were walking out the transporter room, Riker looks back at the transporter girl. Of course, they had to have a girl.
It wasn't O'Brien this
oh,
week.
Oh, no, he wouldn't have looked at her.
It's O'Brien next week, I know that.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay, didn't notice.
Oh, well, you have to always keep your eye for the Riker maneuvers.
Although, I mean, if Jonathan Frakes did direct this episode, I suppose he could have said, you know, what I want to do, I want now you to look over to me and be aware that we had a night last night together. Yeah. So he might have directed it as such.
May have.
Nah, he just wanted to hump her bones.
Yeah, yeah, he was looking forward to tonight. Oh, wait, no, that's a different ensign. All right. So let's talk. Worf figures out that Jadon is using a hypo spray in a very ingenious manner. I don't know, tech, take it from the digital isolinear chips, tech, turn it into liquid, spray it into tech face, tech. But is Admiral Sati really unaware of this? Because she looks not only does she look like she's stunned that that's even possible, I thought her look to Worf was, who the hell is this?
Well, keep in mind, Klingons are noted for using the most unique ways of delivering messages to other people. And I'm going to note the first episode of Enterprise. It was the message was in the genetic markers of the messenger Klingon. Okay, it was in his blood, basically.
Yeah.
So they didn't have to bring the whole messenger in to get the message. I thought it was unique the way he was using it. He's using something that he uses every day, and he uses it as a message system, which I thought was very unique. It just so happened Worf is such a good investigator, he figured it out.
Yeah, yeah, it is an ingenious way of doing it, though. I mean, it's not something you've ever heard of before or will hear of again.
Well, not on Star Trek, necessarily. I think it's a matter of the times. You know, this is 1991. That was sort of a new thing. Since then, in real-life science, we've encoded messages not only in amino acid chains, but we've gone even smaller. We've encoded messages into DNA. There are strands of DNA that contain, you know, the works of Shakespeare that have been encoded. Just because the laboratories can do it, right? Not necessarily that they're being used for espionage, although you never know. The spies wouldn't tell us, I guess.
No, but it is ingenious if you wanted to transport a message, a major message or something complex, you just build it into either the amino acids in the body or you can kind of put it in a genetic marker code and take it, fly across the world. Nobody would ever know it other than the person who put it in and the person who could extract it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty ingenious, but... Okay.
So we skipped a little scene there where Satie comes aboard. She immediately says, I want to get to work. She tells Picard, take me to the engine room so I can see what's happening. She gets to the engine room. They're telling her what happened. And then she's like, wow, I'm going to need a briefing, Picard. You know? They're like, you're the one who didn't allow him to brief you before he took you there. I just find it interesting, like, very much right from the beginning. They set up this
adversarial fight between each other.
Between the two characters, you know, they're always, like, you know, nipping at each other a little bit here and there. Well, mostly her nipping at Picard, you know. And she's quite clear that she normally works alone. She didn't like being forced into him. I wonder about the whole thing, you know.
Well, if I remember right, they were supposed to do it jointly. If I remember the orders
right. But at the same time, she's reporting directly to Starfleet Command and
Thomas Henry,
yeah. Right? Who was a friend of hers and probably not of Picard. I wonder about just how much power she has, or maybe Thomas Henry purposely set her up and like, I'm going to make her work with Picard and maybe Picard's a good guy. He'll reveal some issues with her. I never know. You know, you could write a story either way about exactly what's going on behind the scenes. Yeah.
I think it was a setup, be honest truthfully with you.
What's that? Say that again. Why?
Because you got to keep in mind, they pulled her out of retirement, right? If you read some of the other novels, she was always mentioned as one of the better Starchist supporters of the Federation. It was a book where in DS9, the Sovereign class that was destroyed, I can't think of the name of it. That captain mentioned Seti in his court martial. What he was going to do is playing court martial Kira Nerys for her actions on DS9 towards him. And he mentioned Seti as one of the generals, was one of the people to sit on the tribunal for Kira. So Seti was known as a staunch, strong Federation admiral, and I think she was too staunch, too zealous. And I think the general that the admiral had sent her there was to find out just how bad she really was.
Yeah.
Because why would she have retired if she was still that functional? She was forced into retirement for a reason, and I don't know the reason
why. I wondered
why.
That, too, because she even says, you know, the way I've spent my last few years is planet to starbase to ship to starbase and have no family, haven't seen friends in years, but yet she's retired. So
I don't think that the incident even with Picard was the first one she had. I think she's had a few more run-ins with others, with just as strong captains. And I think this was her last straw with the admiral, because the minute he heard everything from Picard at the end, what did he do? He merely set up and walked away. So to me, that's why I think it was a setup.
Okay.
I think you can write whatever you want for the backstory. She is in a weird situation. I mean, she doesn't wear a uniform, even a JAG uniform. So she's got some kind of autonomy. They could have just left her as retired. Just say she is a retired JAG who is still an active judge or an arbitrator or something. I don't know the word for it, but persona grata, that's the wrong word. But, you know, just one of these people that goes off and investigates. You know, she could have been a Federation, you know, presidential appointee.
Yeah.
Like the Attorney General of the Federation or something.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, they could have gone a different way with it.
And she could have been in charge of what would be equivalent to NCIS. Naval Criminal Investigation Services.
Okay. All right.
She could have been the equivalent to Starfleet Investigative Service.
Yeah.
SIS.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So, Captain, I predict that officer will be extremely valuable in this investigation. And I was thinking, you know, now I know the whole story. Back then, it was just part of the investigation. But I think now she's good. You know, I even get the sense that she was just meeting Worf for the first time. She was stunned to see a Klingon security officer on board. But again, I sense this lady's got wheels within wheels in motion in her brain and knows exactly what's happening at all times. I mean, I think she's that good.
I think if you're trying to do a McCarthy hearing kind of thing where you're trying to make people suspicious of other people, it's good to identify, oh, Worf, or people like him. Hey, there's a guy who is always thinking about security and is afraid and looking for the worst in people. I could use that. I can manipulate that.
And that's basically what she did, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to disagree here with you, Luke. I didn't think that she was preemptively setting out.
But if not, then why would, if she's not preemptively setting out, why does she know so much about him then? I can't believe she walked out of the ready room and hit the computer to say, tell me everything about Lieutenant Worf.
But what does she know about Lieutenant Worf at that
stage?
Well,
his father, the
That comes later, right?
That comes later, yeah. And she's got a staff looking into this stuff, a staff that she trusts. Yeah.
And she does turn on Worf by the end. It's not that, I know there is this thing that whenever you have, you know, whenever you have the question of, you know, security versus liberty, Worf is always going to come down on the side of security, and that's just the way it is. And this particular admiral takes advantage of that potentially, but she won't be the last. This is the way that Worf goes, and it's clear that he goes that way. But even by the end, you know, Worf was not, he wasn't siding with her at all, and she very quickly disposed of him when she thought it was more appropriate to sling that, you know, his father was a traitor at Picard, and you know, when she was building up the case of Picard's incompetence or treason. I view this much more of a
person coming in who is a highly distinguished judge, someone that is retired, but still carries a lot of kind of wisdom and a lot of people have a lot of time for, who happens to very quickly fall down these rabbit holes because of paranoia. And I don't think that Sati, when she comes in, is, you know, she's not intent in pursuing this in one direction or another. Or at least, you know, that's how I read it, in any case.
I think the story, I don't know, I think the story really sets you up or tells you pretty directly that she is the kind of person who would tend to take her, allow her suspicion very quickly to paranoia, as Picard says. You know, she talks about how for 4 years she's been running around with no friends or family, just investigating, right? Right. Maybe she was investigating the conspiracy that we talked about from the first season episode, like you mentioned. I think, in fact, I was going to bring it up at some point, is that I think the story is almost too cleanly against her. And it doesn't really give you a chance to really see her side, or the side for security. Because it was such a clear-cut case against her.
Okay. All right, let's see where we're at here. So they finally confront T'Jon, who admits, basically, to stealing the information, but not to the sabotage. And as it turns out later, let me see here, what was I trying to say? He doesn't admit to the sabotage, and her own investigator, the Betazoid, even confirms, you know, he's actually telling the truth. So now, that's where she starts to drill down even further, because obviously this is running a whole lot deeper than they let on. And
I think, if I remember right, wasn't it an engine failure itself? It's what caused the explosion.
Yeah, it was simple metal fatigue, it seemed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if LaForge and Data, now that's Data soon, you know, not you, Data. If they could have figured out what happened a little bit earlier, the story would have been over. But obviously, we need more time. So the mystery continues. And here's another question, even along those lines.
Actually, Lou, just very quickly, regarding this kind of the Data and Geordi conversation that happens later, I do agree with our guest Data to an extent of the Admiral is made to look particularly bad. And I do think that, unfortunately, they shut off this question mark about it wasn't sabotage and that it just was, you know, an accident. It allows her to go off in the direction of basically saying, well, yeah, just because there wasn't sabotage doesn't mean there's a conspiracy. And I think that's the part where it kind of paints it in too broad strokes. So I think that when you just brought up here about the explosion, I think they would have been better from a story perspective to leave that at least as a potential gray area.
Yeah.
So not make it so clear cut that it wasn't a sabotage. And they could have just had, you know, we don't know, rather than to clearly state that, you know, no one did anything wrong in this case.
Yeah, because they obviously didn't know. But when they find out, though, she's still, you know, Saban. I don't believe this. So, let me see here.
So, just to be a bit nitpicky, neutron fatigue is a real issue in nuclear reactors. I'm a nuclear physicist. That's what I did for the Navy, U.S. Navy. So fission and fusion reactors, neutron fatigue is an issue, but it should not be an issue in a matter-antimatter reactor that doesn't have any neutrons. Just a little nitpick.
Why would it not have any neutrons? Well, what are neutrons, then?
Well, I guess they could have neutrons. They could have neutrons.
There must be some neutrons somewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's not the what it's not the, you wouldn't imagine it's the main part of a matter-antimatter kind of controlled reaction.
Yeah, because in the matter-antimatter engines on the ship, they take hydrogen atoms or hydrogen nuclei, which do have protons and neutrons in it, but then they slam it against anti-hydrogen atoms, anti-deuterium, and then they eliminate each other. There's no neutrons left after the elimination. And before the elimination, they were in the atomic state or in the nucleus state, not free-floating neutrons. But I suppose you would have at least some random, any massive amount of hydrogen that you put there. I mean, some of it decays away, you know, to produce alpha radiation or some kind of neutron radiation. Again, it's not a primary thing that happens in a matter-antimatter explosion. Unlike in a nuclear reactor, a fission reactor like the ones we have on this planet, you know, the power, different things. Neutron production is like a primary thing about how the reactor works, and you have to deal with the neutron flux. It's like a bigger deal. But.
Okay.
I'm glad I was a cutter's mate.
Yeah. I don't know if I would have wanted to do that either.
I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad I'm also a command officer because I could never make it as a science officer.
All right, Doc, you were going to say something?
Well, as Data was describing the matter-antimatter reaction, I have never managed to square in my head exactly where the dilithium crystals fit in any of this.
Yeah, we just take it for granted, but really, how does it fit in the whole thing?
Well, it's supposed to make the reaction controllable by the reaction happening within the lattice structure of the dilithium crystals instead of just out in the middle of nothing or air or space or whatever, which would produce a lot of gamma radiation. Not neutron radiation, but gamma radiation. But, you know, it's just like the Heisenberg compensators on the transporter. They're acknowledging real science a little bit, but, you know, creating a hand wave so that they can have the show.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with.
Oh, yeah, you have to be.
You don't need to spend too much time on it. Which is the same thing about exactly how does Jadon's amino acid thing work, or how did they figure out which computer he was using when he probably would have tried to hide that. Those elements of this particular episode are not that important.
No.
You know, exactly how did they figure out Tarsus' grandfather was willing and not a Vulcan? You know, it's not that important.
But it is interesting how they did figure that out, though. I mean, he obviously didn't list his grandfather's name. So what would they have done to figure that out? But, all right. So now it's time to question the medical staff, and that's where they come across Simon Tarsus, who is obviously, you know, extremely frightened about what's going on. Oh, you knew. I didn't need to bait his head, and where's Counselor Troy and all this? I would have matched her beta Zed with my beta Zed, or beta Zoid with my beta Zoid, you know, to counter or make sure that he was accurate or something wasn't funny, especially as this story got a little worse off. But anyway, so he doesn't quite know what's really going on in this whole thing. And you could tell, do you think as he was sitting there, he was just saying, oh God, they know about my Romulan grandpa? I mean, it has to be some reason why they're questioning him.
Well, certainly that's one of the things he's afraid of, and that's the fear that they feel coming off of him.
Yeah.
You know, he stutters two or three times, and the first time he stutters was when they asked about his race, and he said, yes, I'm human. Largely, my paternal grandfather was Vulcan. Right, so he stutters over that statement.
Yeah, that's true.
But he stuttered a few other times, too, though. Like, over the question of, did you see Jadon outside of work? Or, you
know. Right. So, were they trying to accuse him of sabotaging the dilithium chamber, or Or just simply of being the one who administered these injections. Because I'm thinking, what's a low-level medical technician? Hell, what's an exobiologist? What would they even need any access to engineering for?
Well, this is the Enterprise, after all. Anybody has access to engineering, including guests with no reason to be there. So I'm sure it's entirely possible that Jadon and or Simon Tarsus had access to engineering.
But yet, some lowly ensign tries to, you know, kick Captain Scott out later. Sir, this is a restricted area. Ah, last. Call me Scotty. Anyway. So,
Clara Sutter, the 11-year-old in that one episode, got into engineering. I mean, it's like, whatever.
Well, look at the Klingon that marched right into engineering, put a disruptor right at the dilithium crystal chamber.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, there's been some, or even the Borg entering the, I'm sorry, engineering is like the bridge, it should be this most secured place on the damn ship.
Definitely should.
And it isn't.
But to answer your question more, I mean, this is supposed to be a hearing where they're trying to investigate, or they're holding investigations or interrogations, right? I mean, they think he might be a saboteur, or he's an accomplice of some sort. They're just trying to figure it out. I think the problem becomes once Satie says, oh, we don't have evidence yet, but we will find some, right? That becomes the problem. When you're presupposing a negative outcome before you even look for the evidence, and that's going to picture what you're looking for. It's going to play into your implicit biases, and you'll start seeing the negative evidence but not see the positive evidence or the evidence that would acquit him.
Right, yeah. Real quick, Rosie wants to say hi now, but yet she's very tight-lipped. She's just staring at me right now. She came down to say hi.
Hi.
She's just giving me kisses. This is my, well, you can't see it, but Rosie is our, what are you anyway? We don't even know what she is. Nobody knows what she is. She's some kind of mixture, but they think maybe Border Collie. But she just came down to say hi, so... I gotta go. You gotta go now. All right, come on. I gotta put you back down. So anyway, sorry about that. Let's see. So, it was metal. Hello, Domino's Pizza.
That was... No, I got some radio show keeps calling me.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Hey guys, now we're gonna try and get Brett and Detmer on the line, and
no, they can send you they ask you questions, and they give you a prize for it, and I'm like, all the way from Washington State. Come on, guys, you gotta have more local people to pick on besides
maybe me. That was Data calling you, asking you what's wrong with me. Why is he?
I doubt it unless he starts off with. 1-888.
Oh. All right. Okay, so the investigation is actually over because they knew it was metal.
You can't prove it was me.
No. They knew it was over. The investigation is over. It was metal fatigue. Okay, so let's just continue on. We'll just all go to 10 forward. We're going to laugh over jugs of synthel and talk about the good old... No, we're not. It was simple accident, my ass. Because Saban's calling BS on this, and, you know, we still need to continue to drill. And all the
time... Yeah, to me, that was stupid.
It was stupid. And all the time, this woman... Nellen Tor, I believe her name was. She's sitting there with this pad, you know. What was her job? Was she like the stenographer? And besides serving subpoenas to Captain Picard, what was her job? Just to annoy him, you know, with that beep in his ear?
I guess. I have no clue.
I think the idea there is that anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law.
Definitely so.
Right? She is one of her primary functions is stenographer. She's just taking records of what's being said. Although you think all that would just automatically be recorded.
Yeah, right.
No, that would be too easy.
Yeah, there's because all she it seems like all she does is press the same button.
Maybe everything is being recorded and she's just pressing button to highlight it. Oh, come back and listen to this part again because Picard's talking.
Yeah. I agree it isn't possible. But anyway.
It reminds me of a bad song. It's da 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 di 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 da 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 di di da 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 di 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 di. Get my point.
Phenomena.
Stupid.
All right.
You know what song I'm talking about.
Phenomena.
Yep.
I am completely lost on that one. I have no idea what that is.
You guys don't know the Phenomena song?
No, Doc.
That's right. I do it sometimes with subspace phenomenon.
Phenomenon. Oh, okay.
Subspace phenomenon.
The phenomenon, phenomenon.
Dee-dee-dee-dee.
Okay, so...
Moving on.
Let's have one more hearing against Simon Tarsis where, you know, you think you're a good guy, but actually, you lied! You've got a Romulan in your family that you honor, and it's that Romulan stuff that you... lead you to do all these things that, oh yeah, you've never done anything wrong in your entire life, except for maybe, you know, hide the fact that, you know, your shameful Romulan grandfather was has part of your DNA. But beyond that, you were a model citizen. You've been a model person, but we're still going to throw you under this bus.
Yeah, because I got to have a victim somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Why would they not call it the Drumhead?
Yep.
Now, there's a bit that just happens before this that I like a lot, and I think it's something that we, or at least when I first watched the episode a couple of times, you probably don't pick up, or you don't pick up that perhaps Picard has been doing this in the past. I like the conversation. Like intuition or Betazoid mind reading, for want of a better word. You know, the Federation is not...
Uh-oh.
I think we're losing the Doc.
Yeah, he's choppy.
I might chop.
Usually when he cuts off like that, it usually is just a little gap and his voice picks right up where he left off, but for some reason today it's a little choppy.
Am I choppy at the moment?
No, you're good. Go on.
No, I was going to mention that the Federation is not like Beta Z, where there's no, you know, there are no secrets. There is a certain thing of privacy in the Federation, and I do like the fact that they call out Picard for, you know, would you have pursued something if your Beta Z had said, look, I think there's something a bit suspicious about this guy, and Picard does make the statement that he probably would have done, and maybe he should, you know, reconsider whether that's appropriate or not. And I just think that was a nice little touch there, because everyone on the board, they do have secrets. Now, whether or not this guy has had a secret in his family or whether or not this guy had a secret crush on Picard that he was ashamed of, it doesn't really matter, unless there's evidence that you bring to the table that suggests that, you know, there's a reason why someone's going to kind of interrogate you. And I just felt that that conversation with Picard was very nice, and it almost suggested that they were going to be, well, more respectful of privacy when, you know, like I think a couple of people have mentioned in the past, you know, Troy turns up and, you know, tries to beam her mind into other people's thoughts and scan.
I'm sorry, go on.
No, we're good.
All right. No, I wasn't interrupting. I was saying, yeah, but you cut out again, so I'm not sure how you ended that. All right, so... And now this is kind of where, you know, the story does take an interesting turn. As you said, you know, he's comparing this situation to a Drumhead trial or a Drumhead court-martial, which I had never heard of until this episode. obviously it was a German thing that Hitler did, from what I read.
No, actually, it was done in the early Napoleonic era.
Oh,
actually,
wow.
Where yeah. commanders would say a company commander thought that Private Schmuckatelli didn't charge up fast enough because he was a coward, so they would pull the drum over and he would sit on the drum.
Wow.
If I remember in the history right. Data, you might be able to help me more on this. We're both ex-military.
Yeah, I think it predates Hitler. It predates Napoleon. It predates the American Civil War. I mean, it's been around in the military parlance for a while, since at least the British Empire. The concept, I mean, you have military tribunals, you have court-martials, but the type of court-martial that happens when you're on the battlefield and all you have around you is a drum to sit on, you don't even have official chairs or desks to have a proper court-martial, that kind of concept of being, and that's obviously a shoddy in the military court-martial.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of... And non-judicial court-martial, actually. It's not even technically a court-martial. It's non-judicial punishment, which you don't even have to follow the rules of court. There's this... You know, it's a lower level of... It would
handle misdemeanors in the military, basically.
Well, you can handle some pretty bad stuff, but it's just... It's a lower level than justice. It's without involving the courts directly. You don't need lawyers.
It's now, usually done by the commanding officer of the unit that's handling.
Yeah. Right.
In case of Navy, it would have been the CO of the ship.
Right. And they still do non-judicial punishments in the military. So it's just, you know, you can't take every single thing to court. You have to have a way to deal with things. But in the current system, in the United States anyway, whenever anybody's being brought up to NJP, non-judicial punishment, in the Navy it's called Captain's Mast.
Huh.
In the Army, I think they call it... Anyway, there's different names. But in the current system, if you're being brought up on charges at an NJP, you can... request court-martial, and they have to provide it to you, but not if you're in a war zone.
Mm.
And then, so that type of justice, it's less, there's less rules, there's less innocent until proven guilty kind of concept.
Okay. All right, so Picard has a discussion with the boy and determines that he did nothing wrong. Yeah, he made a mistake, but... You know, he's not going to just throw him away. What do you think happened to Tarsis after this? Is he completely done? Is he in a stockade somewhere? Or did he just resign? Or did they throw him out and that's it? What happened to him?
I think Picard says your career's only over if you're guilty of something. Tarsis is the one who believes his career is over just because he lied. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean... Julian Bashir lied on his resume, and yet he was able to stay in the service. There's other people, and you have to expand it beyond the television show, but like Savick and Saleta were both characters who, in novels at least, were half Romulan, and they were able to serve. And in novels... Simon Tarsis does show up again in a number of Deep Space Nine novels. He shows up as a doctor on Deep Space Nine. He went and got his medical license.
Oh, okay.
And becomes a doctor. So, I mean, that's what the novels have done with him. They say he was able to stay in Starfleet and actually, or he might have got out for a while, got a medical degree, and then came back in as an officer.
Hmm.
So this is situations in the show where we have a distinction between enlisted and officers, and the show's never done that really well. Like here, like everybody has to go through the academy, even the enlisted people, like the academy enlisted training program. It's a bit hokey. I've never thought that the show handled that very well.
No, it depends on the story.
Okay.
I do like...
Well, I do understand why they had to go through the academy. I mean, there is a reason why you go through the academy. A lot of it is basically training on something as silly as the rules and regulations of what's the best way to describe it? It's because of the regs that the standing orders for stuff like first contact, that kind of stuff, is why you have to go through the academy, whether you're enlisted or officer.
Well, it's just nomenclature is all we're dealing with now. Academy implies a 4-year or 5-year program where you get a degree, you become a professional, right, with some kind of degree, whereas you can learn about the rules at a boot camp. And that's the distinction I'm making. Is it, you know... Mm. It's just sort of weird that in Starfleet, even boot camp is also at the academy. It's in the same place instead of having a distinct place for enlisted people versus officers. Uh-huh. But it's a minor thing.
Okay.
I do like, by the way, hybrid characters. You know, characters of multiple races. And especially ones like Simon Tarsi's here, where it's significant to the plot, you know. We too often get into that in-group bias of it's us versus them. You know, we're the Federation and those are the Romulans. Instead of realizing, some of us are part Romulan. It's more realistic and more, you know, because, again, in real life, it's a lot easier for inbreeding between Syrians and Europeans and, you know, Americans and Brazilians, you know.
Well, it does raise an interesting question of how his grandmother happened to hook up with a Romulan. Under what circumstances did that happen?
She probably got raped, unfortunately.
Ooh. Okay.
And,
let me put Savick, you down.
Savick, Soleta, and Simon Tarsis, all of them were descendants of Romulan rape, according to books.
Oh, well, I don't read them, so I don't count them.
Yeah, it would be great. Wouldn't it be great if there was a actual love between a Romulan and somebody else? Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, there is. The episode where Worf goes down and finds the Klingons living with Romulans.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Yeah, that's a good example of how they actually learn to get along and fall in love. Yes, good point. It's just hybrid characters like that. I love that particular thing. You know, you have a strong, especially in Star Trek, you know, you got the planet of hats, right? I mean, every race is sort of monolithic. They don't have a lot of diversity within the races. And so if you want to show somebody who does have diverse cultural backgrounds, like my two parents were different, you represent that by having a hybrid character.
Okay.
Maybe there's a better word for that. I keep using hybrid, but maybe that's hybrid. Maybe that insults.
Mix.
Yeah, whatever.
Mix. I can't say mixed breed because people don't like that either.
Well, okay. So anyway, Picard decides that these hearings are going to stop because they're unneeded. Oh no, they're not. In fact, they're going to be expanded. I mean, this admiral has really lost it. I mean, she's going to. If she has to, she's going to include every member of this ship, including, yes, even Ensign Joey on Deck 26. Everyone will be investigated. And in fact, Admiral Thomas Henry, who we talked about earlier, is coming on board to observe this witch hunt. And that's basically when Picard has served with the subpoena on the bridge. And her only lines, and that girl's only lines in the entire episode is, "Admiral Seti has ordered you to the briefing room tomorrow. You are to be questioned." Walk off. That's it.
Yeah, I'll question her, all right.
Yeah.
I got my form of questioning. She won't like it too much.
So, before we get into the final interview scenes, just to mention, when Simon Tarsis was being questioned, he used the seventh guarantee.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like, in the United States, the Fifth Amendment. You have the right to not accuse yourself at trial. So it's nice because it's referenced. And it's one of the few references directly to the Federation Constitution. It's in Star Trek. And I wanted to talk about it a bit in this relationship with Worf. You know, Worf is quick to judge Tarsis and say he has all but declared his guilt by not answering the question. Does Worf not see the hypocrisy in his own statement? It's like he doesn't really realize it until the final scene when Satie is going after Picard, a man that he respects. But, like, in this very episode, Worf has been reminded about how he has a questionable family history. And he's like, nope, I don't want to talk about it. I'm like, that's taken the fifth, Worf, or the seventh guarantee, whatever you want to call it. And he doesn't see the hypocrisy of how he assumes guilt on other people, and he doesn't want people assuming guilt on him.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought that was very well done, very good use of the Worf character, very, very good writing to integrate that in so well into the story as a subplot for Worf.
And one thing I do like is Picard's speech before the hearing begins. I mean, it was pretty compelling, but it did no good. She's still going to continue on. And what do they come up with? The Romulan spy, T'Pel, or whatever her real name was, who pretended to be a Vulcan ambassador, or Worf's Klingon, father, who is a Romulan collaborator, and yet he's the security chief. And finally, she pulls out the big gun, the Borg incident. And where we finally find out that the Federation lost 39 ships and loss of life at nearly 11,000, including a very important person who was unknown at that time. Do you know who that was?
Her son, I think, wasn't it?
No. I think he's talking about Jennifer.
Yeah, I am. That's the one.
Okay.
That's a very important person that we didn't know at the time. So, and it was really cool. I like the way Picard handled that situation there with, there are some words I knew as a boy, the yada, yada, yada. And those words were uttered by Judge Aaron Satie. And it was fascinating to watch her face as she realized she's become exactly what her own father dreaded.
Yep.
So, but that just sends her off the deep end.
Thanks, Lou. I never really got that. That's a real good way to look at that. That's why she's disappointed in herself at that moment.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. I like that. I hadn't really put that connection together that she realizes she is not living up to her father. And that's all she ever wanted.
Right.
It's good.
And she still can't admit it because she goes way off the deep end. You Picard consorting with Romulans? Where did she come up with that?
Left field.
Obviously.
You're so far off the reservation. The reservation don't even recognize you.
Right. Yeah.
Consorts with some Romulans in the Romulan underground.
Ooh, Picard is one of those, huh? Romulan orgies in Picard's quarters. Okay, so
I didn't bring up sex. I don't know where you brought that in.
Well, I can't figure out how he consorts with them.
Okay, orgy doesn't necessarily imply sex. You're right, and neither does consort.
No.
Moving on.
So Admiral Henry gets up and walks out of the room, and that pretty much lets the air out of her fight. It's all gone. And if she just, Saban calls a recess because he realizes the Admiral just set off a bomb in the room that can't be undone. Everyone gets up and leaves.
A bomb? She didn't set off a bomb.
It's sort of, kind of like setting off a bomb.
She set off a photon torpedo that they can't call back.
And And everybody walks out of the room, and she's all alone, realizing she's done. No, you know, they're not gonna trust her for a squat again. But what I think would have been interesting is if Picard had stayed in the room, in the chair, you know, staring at her as she's staring at him. You know, the camera just kind of backs up
and leaves. I think the way Jonathan did it actually was more poetic. The way he did it by making her just sit there and realize what she had done.
Yeah. So.
And everybody just goes past her and walks away. You're not important anymore. Even her aide, her yes man, eventually walks out on her.
Yeah, and so does the record keeper. She's the last one to go out. But the witch hunt is over. And now it's time for Picard to impale some words of wisdom to Lieutenant Worf.
Oh, yes. Speak the gospel there, Picard.
Mm-hmm. Alright. Alright, so, James, you have anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. It's midnight. You got to work in the morning, don't you?
I do have to work tomorrow.
All right. Yes. Well, then you're in luck. It's time to go now. So unless I miss something, does anybody have?
You miss something? Never. Oh,
sometimes I do. Depends on how boring the episode is. Like, for instance, you ought to listen to Cupid 2 weeks ago, or two shows ago. I gave it a 1.5.
On the dumb scale?
Yeah, not on a 5 scale rating. I gave it 1.5. James gave it a 3. And Chris...
Nothing wrong with Cupid.
Yeah. But you wouldn't know
it. What is it about? It's episode 13 of the LTS.
The Klingon Diatribe. No, not that bad. But now that was a boring Lou Trek show episode. This was, Cupid was just a snoozer to me. So, but anyway... So it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. I'll start high. I love it. I love this episode. I like courtroom dramas. I was with her all the way up until she wanted to burn Simon Tarsis for no other reason than just because she could. And I think that's kind of where she went off the rails. It was pretty obvious that the investigation showed nothing happened to the dilithium chamber. It was a simple accident. And she just can't accept that. It's not very Trekkie, I guess you could say. Except for the syringe. That's pretty techie. But it's a great story. And this does go on car rides with me. So... say it with me, Doc. This is a 5-star rating. I love this episode. I do love this episode. This is almost as good as another admiral who goes off the rails against the crystalline entity.
That wasn't an admiral. That was a scientist.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe not. We haven't gotten there, have we yet?
I don't know. I don't have the schedule.
I don't think so. Where's that at?
No, it's only season 5.
Oh, good.
Silicon Avatar. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We have Colin on for that one. So yeah, I mean I do like this. I think it is deserving of a 5. What about you, Brian?
Well, like I said, I love it because Picard stood up for the principles of the Federation, where Seti was standing up for her views of the Federation. But I like how Worf got dragged into this and then realized just how stupid he was when he did it. I'm actually going to give it a 4. For me, it is kind of boring in some sense. I do like legal dramas too, but when I originally first saw it, I was like halfway through it and fall asleep on the chair when I watched
really?
It. So I actually grew into watching it and liking it. So I have to give it a 4 on this one, guys. I can't give it a 5.
Okay. Data, how about you?
So I think it deals with a very important problem, although it maybe it is a little boring, or it's a little too easy to wipe Satie under the rug and say she was so obviously out of control. You know, this problem of security versus freedom will be dealt with more times in Star Trek and maybe done better, like in the DS9 episodes Homefront and Paradise Lost. But it's a very important thing, vigilance that we have to maintain for our freedom. Freedom requires risk. We have to be willing to take on risk in order to be free. We're not going to catch every bad guy uh-huh. when everybody's innocent until proven guilty. The only truly safe man is the slave. We got to remember disagreement or dissent with our government does not necessarily mean disloyalty. An accusation is not proof.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
You know, occasionally there'll be a criminal that slips through our judicial system and they may kill somebody or cause injury or destruction. But it's better than the other choice where our own fear and paranoia causes us to lose freedom for everybody all the time. So anyway, I think it's a great issue to bring up. I think the show does it really, really well. And I think it's a 5-star episode.
Okay. All right. And finally, James.
Well, I think I have to agree with Data and yourself's rating. Lou, I think it is a 5-star episode. I like something that I've mentioned before in season 4. I think that, you know, there are these little episodes that have, you know, that are punching well above their weight. And I think that's another example this week. It's a bottle show with not really much going on, but I think they turned into a good kind of tentpole episode of the series. I think it's a relevant discussion for people to raise. I do think that, I mean, maybe as I've got older, I feel that the Admiral is like more and more extreme. I think maybe as a, you know, when I was watching it first time, I think that it needed to be troweled on pretty heavy for you trying to flip as the episode goes on to thinking, well, this person is trying to protect the crew, to this person's actually, you know, this is a more subtle issue here, that she's actually impeaching on people's rights and freedoms. But overall, I really do like it. I think it's very good. Great performances. I think it's a top-notch episode from my perspective.
All right. So that would be a 5, 5, 5, 4, 5. Okay, then. Guys, I want to thank you guys for coming on. Brian, I know I have you on for Redemption Part 1 and 2. And Data, I'm not sure where we have you yet. I don't think I have you on anything as of yet. But I still, even though I opened it up, I still haven't put it on the website for season 5. And so we've got a pretty good list brewing here. I could tell you that Ensign Row is available. Newground, The Masterpiece Society, Power Play, Ethics, The Outcast, Cost of Living, and so on. So, I will get this up. I'll get this up tonight. And see what you're interested in. Just let me know.
All right.
A dying planet hangs on the brink of destruction.
Even if I find the solution, you will not accept it.
And the only man who can save it is sentenced to die.
The man is supposed to kill himself. Now, you don't just let that happen. Now, Picard must risk war to keep him alive.
Our ships have been ordered to open fire.
They expect Demison to die!
Death sentence on the next exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
So everyone, why don't you join us next time as we review episode 22 of season 4, and that would be Half a Life. Love this one too. And I believe we have Mark on for that, so hopefully our schedules jive. So everyone, take care and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Say good night, Brian. Brian!
Brian?
Brian! I'll do it for him. Kapla! Good night. From the Klingon.
Sorry, I had it muted. I had it muted. I'm sitting here going, I said kapla. What the hell? And you're sitting there going kapla. I had it muted, my fault.
Oh, well, that's all right. All right, see you next time, guys.
See you next time. Nice to meet you, James.
Again?
Yes, as always.
Okay, nice to meet you, Data.
There you go. Oh, there you go. Which James we're talking about? Yeah, he... No, we don't...
I just realized there's two James here. That's why you have James Data.
No, no.
James Data and Logan. James Data and Logan.
Yeah, we don't call him James here. He's Data. It's like a guy I used to work with. His name was C. Todd Cook. So I said, what do you like to be called? C or Todd? He goes, C. Todd. Like, C. Todd run. C. Todd jump. See, Todd, whatever. So, yeah.
Well, you guys better let me go. I'm already late making the meatloaf.
Oh, crap.
Mixie's growling.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.